Hey, good morning, Eastern Oregon, and welcome to this April 11th version of AM Live on EOA, your connection to Eastern Oregon on the EOA network. And here in just a bit, we will have LeGrand Police Chief Gary Bell will be with us as our guest.
Yeah.
How are you?
First Friday. What is that? Well, yeah.
Do you have any plans for the weekend?
Sports.
Sports, yeah. Stuff?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
It's senior day for EOU baseball, so. And they're playing a ranked team this weekend, so I'm going to do EOU baseball this weekend.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. The last time they were at home, softball had games too, so I did softball last time. Softball's on the road, but I'll talk about that more during
all
the
right.
sports report.
Yeah. Yesterday was beautiful.
It was.
Yeah. In the afternoon,
it was
just.
I had to take my jacket off.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was nice.
Well, even in the morning, I was out doing some stuff outside, and I'd take my jacket off for a minute and it was just a little cold, and then I'd put it back on. But it was cold.
By the afternoon. This morning it was cold, though.
Yeah.
Oh, back down to freezing.
Yeah.
It was nice on Monday, too, though, because I remember I mowed my parents' yard, and it was, I mean, I broke a sweat.
Yeah.
It was nice. Maybe we need that for a while. Hopefully we get that this weekend.
I mean, I was out in the valley yesterday, and man, the stuff's growing, I tell you.
Yeah, but this freezing at night's not going to help that.
No, uh-uh.
I wonder if we got any snow left. I'll bet you we get hit one more time. I'm thinking we might.
I was watching the news this morning, and 2 years ago today, they had a big snowstorm in Portland.
That's not surprising nowadays.
No. Yeah, but it was enough that it made a mark on there. Oh yeah, you know, I mean.
You know, when I was a kid here, we got a lot more snow, but it was more predictable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
We were going to get it in, you know, we knew we were going to get snow on Halloween every year pretty much. And we knew the snow was going to go away by like the end of February.
Yeah.
Now? You never know.
There's no reliability at all.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do they call it? The global warming or whatever?
Climate change.
Yeah.
Which is a whole nother topic. But yeah, the climate certainly is changing. You know, nobody can deny that.
What was the vice president that was so?
Al Gore.
That's right.
Yeah. He won a Nobel Peace Prize for his.
Yeah, something on climate change.
Yeah, it was the inconvenient truth, yeah. Which was overstated, but...
I mean, if he won a Nobel Peace Prize, he did something.
He got everybody's attention.
Yeah, they don't just hand out Nobel Peace Prizes.
Oh, they do, but it's all right.
They do?
Yeah, they gave President Obama a Nobel Peace Prize... I mean, like 6 months into his first term.
For what?
That's exactly the question. Huh. For being a really cool dude, without a doubt, he is. He's big on the cool.
I ain't got nothing against Obama.
No, I don't either.
He got put in a really tough position.
No, but I guess still the point is that the Nobel Peace people, they took a hit on that one. Huh. So.
I don't pay close enough attention to
Yeah.
Politics ain't my thing. That seems like it's kind of politics, too.
Well, it shouldn't be, though. You know what's really interesting is the Nobel Peace Prize came after the guy who invented TNT. And that's what he was famous for. So he woke up, they accidentally said that he died. He woke up and read his obituary, and the thing that he was credited for was the destruction of the wars that came because of his invention of TNT.
Mm. And there has to be a
but
list.
Hang on, wait. There's no the rest of the end. So he decided that he was going to turn around his entire legacy, and so he wanted to not be known as the guy who invented TNT, but started the Nobel Peace Prize. So.
There has to be a list of boxes you have to check to be able to qualify to even be considered for a Nobel Peace Prize. There has to be.
You should look it up. I mean, I would think so too. But
there's not.
I don't know. So no, Joe I mean, Schmo I mean, just... no. That's the. I mean, that was the kind of the. That was the big stir when President Obama was elected. Was it like, Yeah. What I mean, generally, I think it is when people do something that affects all of mankind in a positive way. That would be kind of the, you know, it's a world.
Well, I'm sure there's people that think Obama did something that affected.
Yeah, but
and
not,
then there's people.
Yeah,
that
but
don't.
not 1 year into his first term.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So.
I don't know. I have no idea.
I mean, I think it was something like that. Yeah. So, yeah. Anyhow. Well, hey, do you want to do sports?
Let's do it.
All right.
AM Sports Report brought to you by Hobby Habit right here in La Grande, 411 First Street. Go check them out. They got all kinds of cool things. These Traxxas RC cars. They have Magic the Gathering cards. They do a whole bunch of special events. Joe and his team have turned the inside of that place into somewhere that's actually really cool. Go check them out. Hobby Habit, just for the fun of it. LHS girls softball had another big win on Tuesday against College Park over there in Walla Walla, 17-0. The Tigers had 16 hits in the game. They brought their record to 9-0, and I'm going to say it again. We got to start playing better teams. We do. I mean, we can't just – I think the last five games in a row, we've outscored the other team by like 100 runs. Okay?
Yeah.
When it comes down to playoff time, that doesn't help us.
Yeah.
We got to figure out a way to get better games. I mean, like, get some of these 5A teams. Where my son goes, Dallas, their team is the 5A state champion, returning state. Get a game with them.
Yeah.
Let's go play some good teams.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, we can't be, you know, we can't be going to Enterprise and or, you know, Vail or wherever, Burns. Like, let's play some. I know it's hard because of travel and this and that, but if we're going to go play Philomath, if we're going to drive all the way over there to play Philomath and beat them 21-0, let's stop and play a good team too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Get some experience for these girls and give them a chance when it comes to playoff time, because
that's what
really matters. You're not helping either team winning a game 17-0.
Yeah,
in
but
my eyes.
But that's probably a decision made earlier in the season.
Okay? Well, they know early in the season it doesn't matter.
You know
what teams are going to be good.
Right, right.
So it just has to be like, hey, let's – and maybe they aren't able to get these games. I don't know that part of it, but at least try. Let's try to get some better teams on the schedule.
Yeah.
They travel to Ontario tomorrow for a GOL doubleheader, which, I mean, these games have to happen, the Greater Oregon League, because that's the league they're in. That game starts at 1 o'clock Mountain Time, and these times have been changed to beat a storm that's supposed to be coming in, so they're going to leave early. 1 o'clock Mountain Standard Time is the start time for softball and baseball. You can follow the Lady Tigers on Game Changer, which is kind of cool. Game Changer's an app. You just download it. You type in La Grande Softball Varsity, and you can follow that team. And they have a mom or a parent that streams all the games. So you can watch them right there on Game Changer for free. LHS Baseball got the win at College Park as well yesterday, 14-0. They brought their record to 4-5 on the season. They play Ontario tomorrow as well. So check that out. They also have Game Changer. They don't have somebody that streams, though. So you can see the box score and everything, but they don't have a streamer. And then also the softball team has a Facebook and an Instagram now. It's just La Grande Softball, and it'll keep you all up to date with everything going on with the softball team. Rankings are out for NAIA track and field, and the Mounties women team comes in at 20th in the nation, while the men sit at 18th. Now, you got to understand, these Ben Welch teams are consistently in the top 25 every year, indoor and outdoor. So this is like no surprise. This is normal for us, like 18th to 20th. What we want to see is like this team claw its way into the top 10. That's what I want to see before the season's over. And we're pretty strong. I think we have the number one ranking in the steeplechase with the two steeplechase guys. And I think we're number 8 in shot put. And this is as a team. This isn't like the number one overall time. I'm talking like they take the numbers and like crunch them together. And EOU has the best steeplechase team. Or EOU has the 8th best shot put team. They travel to NNU this weekend on Saturday for the NNU invite and the Larry Byerly invite. The EOU softball team is in Montana this weekend against Carroll Friday and Saturday. The Friday games are 2 and 4 p.m., and the Saturday games are at 11 and 1. And then baseball, like I said earlier, has OIT, who's ranked at home this weekend. Those games are down here at Optimist, and they are at 11 and 2 on Saturday, and then 11 and 2 on Sunday, with Sunday being senior day for the Mounties. And this Mountie baseball team's a lot better than it was the last couple years. So get out there and support these guys, man. It's their senior day this weekend, and they're playing a really tough OIT team. So it should be some good baseball. EOU Women's Lacrosse hosts Corbin on Saturday at 1 o'clock, and that'll be their senior day too for the EOU Women's Lacrosse ladies. And lacrosse has been tough in LeGrand. I don't talk about it a lot, but we've kind of struggled. We have one program win in history in 3 years, and it really wasn't even a real lacrosse game. It was 7-on-7, and lacrosse is not 7-on-7. And we've just struggled, and I don't know where it goes from here. I've heard some talks, and I would love this. I would love, and not to say anything bad about women's lacrosse, but I want EOU, and I've talked to a few people, not gonna say any names, and there's nothing confirmed, but I would love to see beach volleyball come to EOU. There's a beach volleyball team at CLI, Southern Oregon, Warner Pack, Corbin. I mean, all the teams in our conference except for us basically have a beach volleyball team, and I think we have the athletes to put together a pretty good beach volleyball team. I mean, our volleyball team is real good. Granted, it's not the exact same, and sometimes it's different girls that play, but I think just the volleyball attitude and the volleyball culture at EOU would lend well to a beach volleyball team. And Sports Report brought to you by Hobby Habit. Go check them out just for the fun of it.
All right. Good stuff. I was watching a social media video the other day of how they play volleyball, or at least this particular group plays volleyball in the Philippines. And it's there's no 3 points on, no three hits on one side. I mean, every hit is just back over the net. Yeah, it was the craziest thing ever. It was like super intense because every hit then.
It must be a different,
game. I mean, it could have been just a neighborhood game.
Yeah, like somebody put something together. Yeah. One hit, one touch. It's probably, that's what it's called, one touch.
But I mean, every hit was like a spike, you know. They didn't elevate themselves, but I mean, it was like fast. And it seemed like the net wasn't quite as high.
Never seen that.
I hadn't either. Very interesting. All right. Well, hey, let's look outside, and that's what it is.
Pretty clear.
Yeah. What's the weather going to be? Let's look at that graphic and see what it's going to look like today. What's the high going to be? Up to 66, 41 tonight, and maybe thunderstorms tomorrow night, but the rest of the time over the weekend, partly cloudy.
And then it's going to drop back down to freezing Monday and Tuesday.
Yeah.
In the nighttime.
Yeah, look at that.
So that's the 15th of April, and we're still freezing.
Yeah. But it's not, it is not unusual for us to get, dumped on some snow in April.
Yeah. It used to be.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be April showers bring May flowers.
Yeah.
Not April snow.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it doesn't match the rhyme anymore.
No, it doesn't.
Yeah. So, hey, I want to tell you real quick about Patty Barfield, a friend of mine, works up at OHSU, which you may or may not know, but OHSU's nursing department is actually on the campus of EOU. And some of those nursing students are getting together, and they're sending packages to third world countries. Put that picture up if you would. Put the other picture up. Yeah, there you go, thank you. And so they're sending packages to third world countries, sending a box of medical supplies to third world countries. And if you wanna help with that, people, you can donate $20 for the cost of the shipping. The supplies are already paid for. And if you wanna reach out to Saren, phone number is 541-377-7121. and just good little opportunity. They sent us that, Patty sent me that picture. She's one of the professors up there for the OHSU School of Nursing, and texted that to me yesterday. And if you have stuff like that, something good that's going to happen, then send that to us and we'll get that up. So, all right. Well, in just a minute, we will be back with LeGrand Police Chief Gary Bell. Back with LeGrand Police Chief Gary Bell. was that strange when people started calling you Chief? Was that a little bit of a head turn?
Not as much as, you know, when I first became a police officer, yeah, and people would refer to me by Officer Bell. So
yeah,
that took some getting used to, but no, not really. I've answered to a lot of things over the years, and some of them not so great. So
yeah. Are there times, and we talked about this a little bit last time you were here, are there times when you remember, I mean, you'll be in your office. Are you in the same office that the police chief was in when you were a young officer? The same physical?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yeah. The chief's office has been in a couple of different spaces over the last 30 to 40 years, but yeah.
So are there times when you're like in your chair, you're there, and it's like, I remember walking by the door and...
Yeah, I remember
in.
Being the officer walking by the chief's office thinking,
right,
I would never want that job. Yeah, and thinking to myself, you know, being very young you know, just super excited about the job that I was doing, but thinking to myself, man, I would never want that. I don't even know what that guy does.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
I know now what he did. Yeah.
You've got your head around it.
I think I do.
Yeah. So Brian, you followed Brian Harvey,
of
Chief
course.
Brian Harvey.
Right.
Yeah. Was he helpful in helping you prepare?
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah.
And not just Brian, but, you know, Derek Reddington was the longtime second in command at the police department,
yeah,
as the lieutenant. And, you know, just a whole handful of leaders at the police department in sergeant positions. Lola, who oversaw our 911 dispatch center for so long. And John Courtney, who was the chief of police before Brian Harvey. But all of those people, you know, I learned things from each of them.
Yeah.
And people, you know, in other circles of my life as well.
Where was the point where it was like, okay, being a chief is something that I do want to consider doing? When did that finally?
Yeah, so when I became a patrol sergeant pretty early in my career, I was about 5 years in as a police officer, and an opportunity for promotion came up. And leadership, you know, was always something that I was interested in. I participated in Army ROTC when I was in college, and that was probably my first taste of actually instructed leadership principles. And it just interested me. And I've always, you know, been drawn to responsibility. So I tested for the promotional opportunity to patrol sergeant early in my career, not expecting to be promoted. I was testing with a group of candidates that I felt were all very capable and qualified, but I was selected. And I was surprised, but I started learning a lot. You know, I've always paid attention to people around me and read. And, you know, some lessons, you know, in life we learn the hard way.
Yeah.
Know? So I was a sergeant for a very long time. I supervised patrol shifts and our investigation section and the drug task force. And then when Derek Reddington, who had been the lieutenant, second in command at the police department for a very long time, when he was approaching retirement, I started thinking about that. And so I applied for that position when it became available and was selected. And I thought that might be the position that I would retire in. I still, at that point, didn't aspire to be the chief of police. At that time, Brian Harvey was the chief. And then he began to speak with me about his upcoming retirement. And, you know, it created a little bit of anxiety in me because I really enjoyed the relationship that Brian and I had and the leadership team that we were part of at the police department. So I wasn't excited for him to be retiring. And he had suggested it to me. But, I mean, there's no foregone conclusions or anything because ultimately that is a community decision. Mm-hmm. But really, Brent, what I started thinking was, you know, I cared so much about the community. I certainly, you know, had a lot of knowledge about the police department. I understood the values that the department had and needed. And I felt like I'm up to the job. And honestly, it got to the point where it's like, if not me, then who? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm very well aware that, you know, with all of the best intentions, some communities, you know, when they have an outgoing chief retire or leave for one reason or the other, with the best of intentions, they'll hire and appoint a new chief of police, and it doesn't go well.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that it would go well with
right.
me. It's this community means so much to me, and the people here mean so much to me that, you know, I felt like, you know, if the community agreed and they felt comfortable with me being in this role, that they were in good hands with me, and I would take care of the needs for public safety here.
That's good.
Yep.
Yeah, I had, when I was younger, I would have bosses that would just take me to meetings.
Yeah.
They would just take me with them to
right.
places, to lunches. And I felt like, I often felt like the little kid at the big kid's table, at the, you know, at the adult table. But, and I was confused at the time.
Right.
Like, why am I even here? You know,
right.
nobody really cares what I think. But just through that osmosis process,
yeah.
you know, and some of those people, some of those meetings, those older folks or those more experienced professionals
right.
would kind of pull me into the conversation and,
yeah.
you know, and they honored me with the conversation. And yeah, I mean, that was very vital in my
right.
learning leadership.
You know, I very much believe in the idea of being purposeful about what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And I subscribe to this both in my personal life and professionally. And, you know, this is something that we do at the LeGrand Police Department. And that connects to our succession planning.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you leave things to chance, you don't plan both short and long term, then sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't.
Right.
But I think that, you know, we have a long track record of, you know, circumstances in our culture where if you are purposeful, you think about it, and you prepare for mm-hmm. what you know is coming, then the chances that you're going to have success are certainly enhanced. And,
yeah.
and that's what we've been doing at LeGrand PD for a good long while. And, you know, under my watch, that's what we're going to continue to do. And you guys know Jason Hayes, my second in command.
Mm-hmm.
He's the lieutenant at the police department. He's a good man.
Yeah.
And if for some reason, you know, I needed to step away on Monday,
mm-hmm.
Jason could do the job.
Yeah.
But we're doing that in the dispatch center and at all rank levels, you know,
yeah.
at the police department, just being purposeful.
Yeah. Well, and we've seen, like, for instance, in the fire department, LeGrand Fire Department,
right.
where, I mean, Emmett has tried to retire multiple times.
Right.
Do I have that right? Yeah. And people, you know, chiefs have come in and they just haven't stuck for whatever reason.
Correct.
You know, and but I mean, you see that, I mean, those high professional areas that require experienced leadership that people are, I mean, they've been preparing their entire life to take on a fire chief role. Right. And in our rural setting, it takes a particular kind of individual. They've got to like rural life, small town life. There's just a lot that, and we see that with professors at EOU. We see that with physicians at Grand Ronde Hospital.
Right. Yeah. You know, and for us, and I certainly can't speak for Chief Cornford at the fire department, but these positions, we have to have people that possess competency, professionalism, and, you know, they have to have that character as well to be in those leadership roles. And it just doesn't happen by accident. And you may or may not know, but something that under Chief Cornford's leadership, we've developed a deputy chief position at the LeGrand Fire Department, which hasn't been there for a very, very long time. And Merle Lacey is now the deputy chief at the fire department. And so we Chief Cornford and I had some discussions about this, about the model that we've had at the police department, where we've had an administrative second in command in the lieutenant's position for a long time. And that has worked well to kind of grow leaders within the organization. Now, it's not foolproof, because sometimes, in organizations the size that we have, those persons just aren't ready. And so, for instance, when we brought Brian Harvey here as the chief of police, it was the right decision at the right time.
Right.
But if we can grow those leaders and they have the character and competency to do the job, it's beneficial to our community. Yeah. And so that's the effort that's going on at the fire department now. And we're already seeing positive things from the change.
That's great.
Yeah.
And Brian Harvey was a great fit.
Right.
He fit, you know,
he's an incredible man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that is not always the case when somebody comes in from the outside, but that's kind of the tradition though.
Yeah. And so the challenge is that, and I see this repeated in a lot of, I have lots of connections around the state of Oregon particularly, but I see this happen where sometimes you have people specifically say a candidate that wants to be a chief of police somewhere, and they have an incredible resume. Mm-hmm. They test very well. They're very charismatic, you know, when you go through all of the selection components, you know, before you hire and appoint a chief of police. But the thing that sometimes is missing is, but why do they want to be in your community or our community? And they just don't stay very long.
Yeah.
A lot of times you have people that, right, wrong, or indifferent, their choice is to just move from agency to agency to advance their career.
Sure.
And I would offer that, you know, some people can do that and leave positive marks where they're at for that period of time, but there's a lot of times where the agency and the community are not necessarily what's at the forefront of those individuals' minds.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so Measure 110 has been officially changed.
Right, with House Bill 4002.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, give us an idea of how will that... I guess I'm wondering, I mean, I've heard several people say that's a good move, may not have been enough. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a flood of cases now into the illegal. I don't know. Give me your assessment on how,
sure.
you know,
yeah,
where
I think,
all of that is at. Yeah.
Yeah. Considering the challenges that our legislators were faced with, I think that it's a really positive thing. It's a step in the right direction. So House Bill 4002 will go into effect September 1st, and in essence, that will make small quantities of drugs illegal again. there was a lot of discussion and debate in Salem in regards to how that was all going to look. Essentially, they landed on it being an unclassified misdemeanor. So what that means is that, you know, it'll be essentially very similar to prior to ballot measure 110. If a police officer, deputy sheriff, a state trooper comes across someone who has a small quantity of fentanyl, you know, which is just a curse on our community right now, or meth or heroin or name your drug, then they can be arrested for that. They'll be taken to jail. And then through that process, they're right now, statewide, one of the efforts is to create what we're calling deflection programs. The idea with this is, rather than just hold people accountable criminally, is create that consequence through the criminal code so that someone can get the treatment and help that they need so that they no longer addicted to drugs. There are efforts around in each county, and the law has that's been created is allowing each county to do this, to potentially create deflection programs before the person is arrested and taken to jail. But we don't know exactly what that's going to look like here. You know, essentially, we just have to have a robust system or network of treatment options so that people can get the help that they need. But I 100% support the fact that we have created now that consequence to coerce people to have to do that instead of just leaving it to them. Because my experience professionally is, you know, the vast overwhelming majority of people when they're in the throes of addiction are not going to voluntarily seek out treatment. That's just the way it is.
No, they have to hit rock bottom.
That's right, yeah. But, rock bottom or have some sort of a consequence that if they don't do it,
yeah, you're going to jail.
That's right.
Yeah. But you say they can be arrested. Can you kind of explain that? What do you mean? They can be. Like, so say Brent's got, you know, a gram of meth, and I as the cop, I get to decide whether or not I'm going to arrest him and take him to jail?
Well, it's not unlike, if a police officer, you know, is engaged with you for committing a number of other crimes, say criminal mischief.
Right.
The police officer could issue you a citation if they feel like that's the most appropriate thing. What I can tell you is you're going to end up going to jail.
Now, that's what I wanted to know.
Now, I'm telling you that today, not knowing, you know, in the months to come, what any kind of a deflection program might look like here in LeGrand and Union County, because those are not developed just yet. But more often than not, and as we sit here right now today, that's what will happen.
Yeah, I'm a pretty firm believer in, like, when it comes to drugs, it shouldn't be based on emotion. So there should be no emotions involved. Like it is you're going to jail or you're not. It's right. Not based on whether the cop's having a good day or, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
Because human emotion comes into that.
Right.
And when it comes to drugs, I think human emotion needs to go out the window and it needs to be cut and dry. Like, you have this much drugs, or you have any drugs on you at all, illicit.
Right.
I'm not talking about weed. Weed's a whole different, like, story kind of to me. Mm-hmm. But, like, if you have meth, if you have heroin, if you have fentanyl, you're going to jail, period. Right. Just at least to establish that rapport, you know, rapport with your criminal record, and maybe eventually you work to get that off, which I'm a firm believer in that too.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, 5 years down the road or whatever, you talk to the DA and you say, hey, I want my record expunged. What do I need to do? I'm a lover of that, actually, because I don't think that because you got caught with a certain amount of dope or got a felony that you shouldn't be able to hunt or have guns down the road. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's
so
right.
I think you should be able to earn your record being cleaned. But I also think that when you get caught with dope, you need to be established in the system, and it needs to be immediate. You
right.
know what I mean?
And I agree with you. The idea is to not just punish people and discard human beings.
Never.
What we're looking to do with this is to regain that mechanism where we can get people on the right track. Ultimately, they have to buy into it,
right?
But there has to be a consequence, because what we also want to see is, you know, because I think most your viewers, people in our community, they know this, but I'm going to say it anyway. A lot of times it's the very same individuals who are struggling with addiction to drugs who we are dealing with calls for service related to child neglect and a myriad of other familial issues and community issues. And it is a spider work network of issues that if we can somehow positively impact this addiction issue, then may we at some point see some positive movement in our workforce and, you know, a reduction in some of these other calls for service that I'm talking to you guys about. That's the whole thing, is it's like the health of our community. And,
right.
And so if I think that this is a step in the right direction, is it enough? We'll see.
Yeah.
So basically what we got, what Union County or LeGrand has to do is start working on getting the treatment part in place.
That's right. Yeah.
Because we have nothing.
And those.
I mean, we do have a little bit, but
right. We
don't have a treatment center. We don't have, you know, Baker's smaller than us, and they have a huge treatment facility.
Right.
You know what I mean? And granted, a lot of people from Oregon go there.
Right.
It's not just people from Baker, but that would probably be like one of our huge goals here, is establishing some sort of inpatient treatment.
Yeah, there's a meeting and some training that's going to be happening in May in Salem, where I know a number of local officials, and I'm going to try to make it myself, are going to go so that we can hear what some of these deflection programs are looking like in a few of the counties that have already established things like that.
Yeah.
But you guys know what happens sometimes in the legislative process is, you know, and I've referred to legislation sometimes as being sausage made. You know, oftentimes you don't really want to watch it being made, but the idea is that the end outcome that you have a palatable product, right? but what happens is that, you know, there are things that are super well intended, but the groundwork or the pathway to the ultimate solution hasn't actually been developed yet.
110.
Exactly. And so, in large regard, it's like we know how to do the enforcement component that's connected to House Bill 4002, but the deflection and some of those other things, which are well intended, that's not developed yet.
So, what are some of the things you've heard?
Just essentially that a police officer or a deputy, state trooper, they have contact with someone, they're in possession of drugs, instead of going directly to jail, they would be taken directly to some type of treatment.
Oh, okay.
And we don't have something like that.
I'm not anti that.
Right, I am not anti that either, but there's a few things that would have to happen for me to get behind that with all of my weight. And one of them is that I don't have the staffing to, if it creates additional workload on my police officers, even if we wanted to do that,
right?
We just can't.
Like where we're at right now, you don't have a guy that can drive somebody over to Baker to
no.
take somebody to treatment. No way.
No. And, you know, it's certainly a bit hypothetical, you know, when we don't know what those things are. So I'm a little reluctant to say too much about it because, hey, I'm open-minded. And if it's, you know, for the betterment of our community, I'm in. But we'll see.
It got deleted. Never mind. Somebody put a question up and then deleted it. Morning, TJ. Or maybe she's fixing it.
I get all that. I guess, and it's complicated because, I mean, we're not, like what you said, we're not wanting to just, somebody who has a drug issue and they just are shipped off to jail, which I think has kind of been, I mean, the whole reason Measure 110 came into existence was to treat people that have drug addiction issues with some kind of a path that doesn't just take them to jail.
Right.
That leads them to treatment. That was, I, that was kind of the intention of it.
Yeah, yeah, because Brent, I mean, full circle, you know, if you just take somebody to jail who is addicted and they spend whatever period of time in jail, when they come out of jail, they're going to be addicted, yeah. Okay? And oftentimes when we see people coming out of jail who are in addiction, then they go, you know, seek out, you know, a fix. And it's not uncommon that that's when they're overdosing as well. Because
they go right back to the same amount they were using.
That's correct.
When they went into jail, their body starts, you know, not needing the drug as much. And then you put the same amount in that you were doing when you stopped, and your body's like...
Correct, yeah. So, but basically the idea is through a drug policy that I believe in is there's that consequence of jail, but we have to have the ability for people to get better. Mm-hmm. Because if we just do this cycle thing, then it's like we're chasing our tail, nothing changes. Maybe they're in jail for, you know, a few days. But, you know, those other things, you know, increasing our workforce, making that more viable, having kids be safer in homes without neglect, none of that changes. So a more ultimate or a solution that I think that would all benefit from is if we can create that foundational mechanism for people to, yeah, there's a consequence to force them into this path, but to get better.
So for me, locked up treatment facilities are non-traditional in Oregon. We don't really, I don't even know, we don't have very many of them, if we even do have any. But there's quite a few people that are in recovery that'll back me on this. A lot of drug addicts will tell you the only way they can get clean is to be locked up first and then taken to treatment. You know what I mean? Like that's ideal for some people. You give them 30, 60, 90 days behind bars, let them get clean. And because these treatment facilities, you can just walk out of.
You're right.
You know what I mean? There's nobody standing there, but jail, you can't walk out of.
Right.
You know what I mean? So you get clean. And for some people, this is the only way it works, is like, hey, get me clean first and then put me in a facility where I can learn how to manage these thoughts and these things that are, you know, going through my head that are causing me to use drugs or alcohol.
That's right. Yep.
So let me ask a question, and this is kind of back to one of the things Kyle was mentioning, because when an officer interacts with someone who is in possession of drugs, there's a difference, I would think, in my mind and in the difference of the officer. There's a difference if they're carrying an amount that is for personal use or if they're carrying an amount that is clearly for distribution. I mean, those are two different things. How does 4002 help that? How does an officer evaluate that kind of a thing?
Yeah, so there's a lot of moving parts in what you just said.
Yeah.
So, you know, the distributor that, I mean, we've had some cases recently. Some of our state troopers have stopped some cars, and you see in the media that's like clearly, you know, pipeline level distribution where you have, you know, I think there was one on the western side of the state here recently where there was a ridiculous amount of pounds of methamphetamine and a whole bunch of fentanyl pills. That's clearly pipeline-level distribution. But let me just share with you that at a local level, many, many people who are in the throes of addiction, who are using drugs, are also engaging in the practice of distributing drugs.
Yeah, that's how they can afford their
habit. That's how they're paying for their habit.
Right. So,
of course.
But when you have contact with a individual, it's not often able to be proven that person is dealing drugs or distributing, but sometimes it can based upon the number of, or the amount of drugs they have, the package and materials maybe that they have in their possession, things like that.
The amount of cash they have.
And if we have an investigation, say that the Drug Task Force is involved in, where You know, there is an informant or drug buys that are happening with a particular individual who is known to be engaging in these activities, then those investigative methods can be brought in to the case and used by the district attorney in evidence to prove the level of crime, distribution of controlled substance rather than just possession. But oftentimes when a police officer responds to a call for service or has contact for someone in the community, say they respond to a domestic disturbance or another call for service, and during the, say that individual is arrested for a separate crime, and during the processing of that individual, they're found to be in possession of, with 4002, an illegal amount of drugs, and that will be any quantity. That will be referred, all of that with the evidence will be referred to the DA's office, and based upon the evidence, the charging level is determined. So is there enough quantity? Are there other, you know, items of evidence or circumstances that would rise to the level of being able to charge that person and get a conviction for distribution rather than just possession?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. There's greater consequences, okay, associated with law for distribution or possession within a certain distance of schools.
As
and now this new one, if I remember correctly, within a certain distance of parks, things like that, there's enhanced penalty for those kinds of things. But let's bring it back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago. The solution that we're looking for is the same thing. You know, the difference being the person that it's like they're not interested in getting better. They're just hurting people and our entire community. Then those people just need to be held accountable and incarcerated. So I don't know if that
no, it does. That helps. And so, so this being an unclassified misdemeanor, why don't you? What is the benefit of that? And yeah,
that
how,
was
is, a, how is that going to work? Yeah.
Yeah. So.
And I didn't mean to
you're,
pepper you
you're
with all these
questions.
You're
asking me to get in
yeah.
a little in. I'm about to outkick my coverage, so
okay.
stand back and watch.
Okay.
So this is legislative action, all
okay.
right? There were some who wanted this to be a Class A misdemeanor.
Right.
There were some who wanted it to be something less. There are a lot of moving parts as to why each party or each faction that were negotiating this wanted one or the other. As a police chief, I wanted that to be at least a Class A misdemeanor because that protects our officers in terms of if there has to be force used in the process of effecting that arrest and a whole myriad of other things. The compromise in the legislative process was, and it was late in the game, I don't know, maybe seventh, eighth inning, where somebody suggested, how about an unclassified misdemeanor? And that leaves a lot of the discretion at the local level with the court. That stuck. Everybody's happy with it. So I don't know if that helps.
No,
some.
It does. And so then if force is needed, mm-hmm. then there's room for that to be. It fits within the bound. But so then how does the DA or the judge ultimately is the one who classifies that?
Well, it's already classified,
okay?
But they have mechanisms for different class of crimes,
right.
Misdemeanors, felonies,
right.
And each of those within that class of crime, what does that mean in terms of the sentencing structures and
yeah.
the consequences
yeah.
that can happen from court or even... not only in our own county, but in all the other counties around the state is, you know, if it's a Class C misdemeanor, a lot of jails aren't even going to take the person.
Right.
You see what I'm saying? So, you know what? We need to get D.A. McDaniel on here.
We're having
some of these questions would be perfect for her, and
yeah.
She will be within her coverage of kicking that, okay?
And
you can tell her that I said
she's
so.
She's the special teams specialist.
Well,
yeah.
but we, you know what? She's doing a great job.
Special teams.
Her office is doing a great job. But we all have what we do.
Right.
And so, you know, but this is going to be, it's going to create some challenges, I know, because as an example, you know, Sheriff Bone in his jail, this means more people coming to his jail,
right?
You know, but those are good questions to ask those folks.
But
so we all have a vested interest and with the common goal of our community,
right?
Yeah. In doing our part and working together in order to make this work. And I think that to a person, you're going to find that everybody believes that this is a step in the right direction.
Yeah.
So the lady with the question, Carrie, said you kind of answered her question. Thank you. Good morning, Tony. And Bud Forrest says, 1975 reserve policeman number 131 checking in.
Wait, but where? Was he with
LeGrand? He's from here. But was it here in LeGrand? He'll answer in just a second. He's still here. No, but I would imagine he's from here. He grew up.
Tell Bud to swing by. We're hiring police officers right now. I'll help him with the application. And we'll just touch him up a little bit. I'm sure that he's got the foundational skills. These days we're having to think outside the box a little bit, but you know, well, hey, you guys all think I'm joking.
Do you guys,
come on,
by any
bud.
Chance, have like senior citizen patrol?
Well,
yeah,
I'm not
he
gonna,
said I, yes. Bud said yes. Okay. It was here in LeGrand.
Fantastic.
Well, this is another question which I think you can answer is within your coverage. one of the frustrating, and people will have various opinions of this, one of the problems with Measure 110 was since you couldn't catch the little guy, you couldn't use the little guy to catch the big guy. Good, bad, or indifferent, part of right. police work or part of whatever it might be is, you know, you put pressure on the little guy, the guy that's lower in the structure, and you negotiate with them a way of getting more information until you really get the people that are big distributors.
Right.
Will this help? I mean, and that process was, I mean, one of the reasons that drug enforcement was really difficult in LeGrand. Even with Measure 110, distributing was still illegal. That right. still was enforceable, but there was no mechanism from a detective standpoint to get to those people. Does this help that process?
Yeah, of course it helps.
Yeah.
You know, it's an interest. Police work, investigative work, drug investigations, it's interesting in a lot of ways, but I'll share with you that, you know, drug policy in the United States, you know, has been hotly debated and waffled back and forth for decades. Arguably, it's like, where are we today, you know, compared to where we were, you know, in the 70s or 80s, you know, in drug policy in the United States. I can't bother myself as a municipal police chief at the local level with, you know, United States drug policy. What I have to do is do everything that I can and everything that we can as a department in order to impact the very real and felt public safety in our community.
Right.
So that as a premise then is a starting point for how do we view drug investigations and enforcement. And you know, some agencies, our federal agencies, state agencies, large task force, you know, there is a lot of effort towards just interrupting and impacting, you know, the large level movements and distributions of drugs. Appropriate, entirely appropriate, because the more success that our partners that are doing that have, the better that we are in our community,
yeah,
which means that there's less drugs in the pipeline that can come to our any community for that matter. Then, you know, collective efforts, you know, locally to still disrupt and enforce the larger drug dealers or movements of drugs both into and within our county and the city, entirely beneficial. But what I want to tell you is that as a local police chief, even the low-level individual, the user, sometimes those people, we need to take enforcement action against those people too.
Absolutely.
Because at the local level, because we all have our part in the network of this.
Right.
And that may have a significant impact on what I mentioned earlier in terms of not only the very real, but the felt safety within our community. Because that one individual who, you know, the DEA, some of our large task forces, we have a very large task force in a Haida area in Umatilla County next door to us. They're doing great work. Keep it up. That's what I want them to do. But the LeGrand Police Department and other local municipal police departments, we still need to take enforcement action against that dad,
right,
or that one individual that lives in a home. Because guess what? If we do that and we get them into this system where now with House Bill 4002, there's consequence again. If we can get that one individual on the right track, then his kids are probably going to be positively impacted.
Yeah,
right. And if he still has a job, maybe he can keep that job.
Right.
Or maybe we can get him in a situation where he's employable.
Yeah. I'm
and
a
so
firm
that
believer.
Helps.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No. So what I'm saying is that we all have our part to play. But the answer is yes. Sometimes what happens is we can get that one individual, and in the course of an investigation, we have to make decisions. Can that individual provide some information to us, you know, that will further an investigation where we can bring a successful prosecution against somebody that is making more problems within our community? So, yes, the answer to your question is yes. That's a long way around, but
no.
I thought that might be interesting
to
your viewers.
Yeah, no, that's good.
I'm a firm believer in dysfunction breeds dysfunction. So if you can put a hamper on that dysfunction,
right,
then it helps down the line. But
look, just the mere, Kyle, like what you're saying, just the mere fact that House Bill 4002 is going to be embodied in law and make it illegal once again to possess drugs in Oregon, that has a positive impact before anybody even has contact with
right.
a police officer, because what we're experiencing, some more so in certain communities than others, is that the inhibition for people to not do these things out in public or not do them to that was gone.
Right. They just lost their inhibition.
Right.
Completely.
So now with this being criminal again, then it causes people, and it creates paranoia in people and worry that it's like, I'm going to get caught. There's consequence. I'm not trying to say that we're evil in terms of glad that people are, but it's like, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, that's a positive
there
thing.
There has to be a disincentive.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
Let's get this question in from Carrie before we run out of time. But Bud, first from Bud. Bud said he would love to be back doing it. It was one of the best jobs he ever had. He's still friends with people that he did it with, and thank you for your service, but he said he'd need a wheelchair. Carrie's question is...
We got Dodge Durangos, they got wheels on them.
Yeah. When the jail is full, is there a plan in place for people who are arrested for drug offenses? Is there like a treatment facility they can be sent to, and how will this affect the budget?
Yeah, so this...
We probably aren't there yet, right?
This is a Sheriff Bowen question,
okay,
especially the beginning. So the jail and the sheriff and his team, they have a really well-established system where it's a matrix system where, you know, people that are brought to jail, if they're to capacity, then they will release the person that has that lowest matrix score.
Yeah, which is usually the least threat to the public.
Yeah, maybe
right?
somebody has been brought to jail on a warrant for a failure to appear on
right.
a shoplifting charge, you know, so maybe they get released. But that's, I know that Sheriff Bowen or his team could give you, that would be best for those folks to answer
we
that
will.
Question.
We'll ask him
yeah.
on the next
yeah.
Keeping It Clear.
Hit
well,
him up,
and,
yeah.
And one question before we quit, and that is, Cody started up, Sheriff Bowen started up the drug task force.
Right.
Where are you guys in that? Are you, I mean, I know yeah. you're in support of that.
100%.
Are you going to be able to maybe down the road contribute
right.
to that because right. there's a financial cost.
Yeah.
And most of it's in
manpower. Isn't it horrible that when it, at the end of the day, oftentimes a lot of things come down to money?
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Yeah, it sucks. You know, yeah.
But here's the thing is, so going way back to, you know, the very beginning of my tenure, you know, in local law enforcement here, we were doing drug investigations, and the sheriff's office and the police department have been partners in this effort for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. About 2015, LeGrand PD had to pull out because we didn't have the staffing to do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kept trying to get back to it. Then ballot measure 110 hit, the pandemic, the unknowns. So here we are. So I applaud the sheriff in what he has done, breaking free some staff to work on these investigations. We want to support in any possible way that we can. Where we sit right now today, I don't have a police officer that I can just move because here's the thing. Maybe 10 years ago, but the volume of calls that we have now and the shift coverage, it's if I take somebody from those, it's like that means we're not responding to calls.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know because what we're talking about in progress emergency calls. And it crushes me because it's like, I know we need to do this. You know, I requested an additional position in our upcoming fiscal year budget. I don't know if that's going to be able to be funded or not. I mean, we're talking about you know, I'm going to tell you what the number, it's about $116,000 a year.
That's what I would guess. Yeah.
But I don't want everybody to think, hey, well, maybe I should, Bud. pays well. No, the truth is,
but that's probably not even local, equipping them.
Yeah, our local police officers are not making that. That's not their take home. But that's insurance,
that's administration, that's costs, everything. Yeah.
That's a total. That's their salary plus all the roll ups for that position. But if we were able to do that, then I could assign somebody to work collaboratively with the sheriff's office personnel. To really reinstitute the drug task force of old. You know, the sheriff and I and our equivalents with the Oregon State Police, we have had several sit downs, you know, trying to get because the state police has been involved directly with investigations and they haven't. And the reality is oftentimes people think, well, you know, it's a state but it's like when you spread it all out, they have the same issues that we have in terms of constraints on, you know, the fiscal needs.
If they don't pass a full position, mm-hmm. is there a possibility that maybe a half or a quarter or, you know what I
well,
mean?
Well, it's just harder to do a half. I mean, for police officers, I can't really do like a halftime police officer because in order to get the certifications, keep the training up and things like that. Okay. But, you know, what I can tell you is if this doesn't work, because here's the thing, and I don't want it to sound like it's Chief Bell or the police department against the city or any, no, it's, look, you guys know that the fiscal situation for any of us is, you know, there's needs. There's more needs than there we have. There's a bucket of money, mm-hmm. you know, that the community provides to the city through taxes to not only provide for public safety and the police department and the fire department, but also maintain our parks and the library and the streets. And it's no different than the three of our homes, right? There's always something there's things that we need to do. There's things that we would really like to do. And oftentimes somewhere in there, it surpasses the amount of money that we have available to do it.
It's like what Jake said at the commissioner's thing. He said, you got your bucket of money, you just hope there's a little bit in the bucket when the month's over. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's the reality.
Yeah, the reality is that adding people, personnel, it's already, not just at the police department, but within the city, I mean, you're already talking over 90% of the costs, right? Paying people and having people on staff is the most expensive thing that we do.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. And that if this was like a one-time expense that I could, you know, go before the city council and ultimately the budget committee and say, hey, if we could carve out X amount of money this year, that might be a little bit more realistic or palatable, easy to do, than when you hire someone that's this year, next year, right, into the
right,
future.
Right, right, right.
Unless at some juncture you start laying people off. We don't right. want to do that.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see, you know, but if the money isn't there, you know, if the budget committee decides that that's not something that we can do, then I'm going to do everything that I can, you know, to participate. You
right,
know,
right.
that might be one of our detectives. Could we, because our detectives, we have a grant-funded detective that by the tenets of the grant has to stay within these guardrails, but they do domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and they got a full plate, and that's all important stuff in its own right,
mm-hmm.
right? Very important. But that's a grant-funded position. So that person is off the table in terms of doing drug investigations.
Right.
And then we have two detectives that, and you know, they're doing all of our child abuse, our child neglect, our major crimes, our person crimes, our financial crimes. And you know, it's a good thing that a lot of people in our community may not realize how busy they are, because you know, if you don't know, and some of that naivety is not a bad
right,
thing, because
right.
but they're very busy.
Yeah.
But the idea would be, it's like, could we have one of them, at least in a part-time capacity, Kyle, work
help
on drug investigations?
The, yeah.
yeah so.
Or even like, and I know that this will happen, like your patrol guys, if they hear something or if they're working together.
That's happening
you
already.
You know what I mean? It happens
yeah,
100%.
Already.
Yeah. It's not
yeah.
like there's like this force field in between
yeah.
LeGrand and the count. You know what
right.
I mean? There's
nope.
communication. We
yep.
it's
we
not
need each
like,
other,
yeah,
and we do anything we can to support one another. You know, yesterday I was in the office and the patrol guys, I needed to talk with one of them about an investigation, but every time that they would free up from a call, and it's like, oh, I'll catch them, another call.
Oh,
you know, and so
crazy,
this is
man.
The way it is anymore. You know, it's not uncommon. These guys are just call to call to
yeah,
call.
Yeah,
and,
that's crazy.
You know, so we have to be very careful to not overburden them, you know,
right.
and say, hey, will
sure.
you do this? Hey, can you do this? Because it's like, you guys know how that goes. It's just people management. You know, if you overburden at some point, then something isn't going to be given the attention that it needs, and then product
the
and performance, customer service, things like that. The ball gets dropped. Something isn't going to get done. I's aren't going to be getting dotted. T's
yeah.
aren't going to be getting crossed. And you know, I don't want that to happen.
No.
Right. Well, and our city government, and it took me for a while to put it together. I mean, going back to your house metaphor, is that, you know, I mean, you might want some landscaping that you could want to do to make your house look pretty or whatever, but if your roof needs replaced, you're gonna replace it first, because
right.
everything underneath of it can get damaged or soaked
right.
or ruined or whatever the case might be. And so, and the city is very much, I mean, people might like want better roads. They want, I mean, everybody is grouchy about roads,
right.
you know. But when it comes to the difference between public safety, spending more money on roads or enhancing the swimming pool, you know, whatever it might be, all of those things are nice and important, you know,
right.
and every one of those budget managers has a dream for their budget.
Right.
If I had a little bit more here, I mean, the library,
yeah.
the parks department, whatever it might be.
Yeah, my perspective, Brent, if I can share with
yeah.
you, is that it is my responsibility. The city, the community has put me in this position to, I will tell you what I believe we need, and I will advocate for that. But I also thoroughly respect government and the process, and we have a budget committee, and public safety, the police department, is a component, is a piece of that.
Right.
Yeah.
And I would not be doing the city or the community, I wouldn't be doing what I've been asked to do if I wouldn't advocate and tell you, it's like, look, here's what I need.
Right.
Now, the reality is, I may know that that is a big ask. And now, it's my responsibility is to not be silly either, right?
Yeah.
And I'm talking in needs versus wants. I understand that. But if I tell you that this is what I think that we need in terms of providing for the best policing services in our community, that's my responsibility to bring that forward.
Yeah.
Now, if there's an entire network of system, you know, including, you know, through the city manager's office, city council, and ultimately with the budget committee, and then what they decide back to the city council for them to ratify the budget, I respect that. That's their job, is mm-hmm. to sort out priorities.
Yeah.
You know, because they have, it's like, here's the pie. How are we going to divide it?
Right.
But you can't just wish additional dollars out of thin air. It just,
no.
I mean, you can, and just wait. Yeah. See what happens.
It's the balance. It the budget work. Has to balance.
It doesn't yeah. work that way. Yeah. That's correct.
Hey, thank you.
You're very
so,
welcome.
So much. We, yeah. It's always a great conversation, Gary.
Yeah, very yeah. good. Yeah.
Chief Bell. Yeah.
Terry says, we appreciate all you do in the community. Bud says he hated the day shift when he worked that desk because the grumpy chief was always there.
It's all right.
He said he worked the night shift all the
Bud,
time.
Hey, Bud, we work 24 hours a day. We'll put you on night
He shift. Also said smart dispatchers help tremendously, and he's right. Yep. Yeah, I mean, that kind of goes without being said. Like the yeah. Dispatchers
entirely
like,
different topic. I know we got to go, but
oh,
real
yes,
quick,
yes. a positive. Yes, no, and we have a graphic. So, tell us about the drug take back. Yeah.
Oh yeah. So
were you
well established
else?
Drug take back
yeah.
day, Saturday, October 27th from
April
27th. Why did I keep?
Yeah, it's all
we
right.
do it in the fall too.
Yeah.
So catch us in October, but even before then, April 27th, Saturday, later this month from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Safeway parking lot. Bring your unwanted, unneeded, expired prescription drugs. We'll safely dispose of them. If you miss us on that day, you can drop them in the lobby at the police department 24 hours a day. You can also drop them at Red Cross, Safeway, and Grand Ronde Hospital.
Nice.
Successful program, and also I think everybody knows now, but these keep these drugs out of grandkids' hands and keep them from being where we don't want them to be, and it also keeps them out of the water table. Because, you know, we used to, it's what we did.
Don't
you flushed them.
Or flushed them.
You know,
them. Yeah,
but,
yeah,
don't do that. Just, we'll safely dispose of them. The other thing I wanted to tell you was, positive thing, later this afternoon, I'm on my way to Salem. We have a 911 dispatcher who's graduating from Dispatch Academy tomorrow.
Oh, awesome.
So, yep, she'll be done tomorrow and back and answer any emergency calls.
Awesome.
Yep, exciting cool. stuff.
That's good. Well, if you get that post on social media, we'll share it on
Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep,
yeah.
We will.
Yep. TJ Jones says, awesome, great talk. And then let's get on to
on this day.
April 11th, 1898, President McKinley asks for a Spanish-American War declaration. 1898. 1921, on this day, Iowa imposes the very first cigarette tax, state cigarette tax, 1928. It's crazy how far cigarettes have gone away in our, you know what I mean? When I was a kid, mom's just smoking in the car, you know, like there's no car seat. Nowadays, you don't see a lot of people smoking anymore. Like when I was in school, we made ashtrays for our parents.
Right.
That's
yeah.
unheard of
yeah.
today.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. And then we'll jump all the way to 2013. Fossilized dinosaur eggs with embryos inside are discovered in China, which that's crazy, like an actual embryo. And then the same day, this tells you what kind of world we still live in. This is only 11 years ago. Two women in Papua New Guinea were beheaded for sorcery. In 11 years ago, people still doing that in other countries? That's crazy to me. 2023, the largest cosmic explosion ever recorded. A fireball 100 times the size of our solar system with a brightness 2 trillion times the brightness of the sun is thought to be a large gas cloud originally. It entered a black hole 8 million light years away, and we recorded it. That's crazy. What did that say? 2 trillion times the brightness of the sun?
Well, what I get is,
how do you even record that?
8 million light years away.
Yeah, that's a long ways away.
Well, it's a long time ago.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true. On this day, the number one song in America in 2004 was "Yeah" by Usher, Lil Jon, and Ludacris. And then my quote for the day comes from Russell Baker: "Listen once in a while. It's amazing what you can hear." One more time: "Listen once in a while. It's amazing what you can hear."
All right. Hey, thank you, Chief Bell.
Thank you, Chief Bell.
Yeah,
good talk today.
Really appreciate it. Yep. Great conversation. Thank you, guys. We'll
see you Tuesday.
Yep, see you next week.